Hello and welcome back to Sibylline Insights. I'm Gareth Westwood, Head of Global Intelligence, and we join you after somewhat of a hiatus in podcasting. In the last few weeks, we've of course seen another war breakout in the Middle East, and we've been very busy covering that here at Sibylline, as well as preparing our annual forecast. So it's been a busy time, but we are back. And I am once again joined by my co-host, Sydney Stewart, our lead Americas analyst. Sydney, good morning.
Good morning, Gareth.
So, what we could probably make this podcast last 2 hours, but our producer says we're not allowed to do that. So we're going to quickly cover a few topics and then maybe point our listeners to where they could find out more. So, of course, on the 7th of October, Hamas went across the border into southern Israel, and the rest is what is quite recent history. We would almost certainly be out of date even if we were to publish this podcast an hour after recording, because the conflict is moving so fast. But what we did do last week, we talked about some of the more global implications that are now the focus of many people's attention. So we did a webinar on Friday, which of course is available to listeners. All they need to do is get a hold of us at their email address. We discussed the American foreign policy implications, and interestingly enough, how it could impact the election. We recently heard from politicians in the US the desire to disaggregate Ukraine and Israel funding, for example. What are we seeing from the US position, because it's been unusually bipartisan hitherto?
It has indeed. Public polling in the US has thus far showed that following the 7 October attack, public support remains very high. Among Republican voters, it remains about 80%, which is stable compared to the time in the spring when that poll was last taken. And for the first time in several years among Democratic voters, there's also majority support. So support for Israel versus support for Palestine is above 50%. So strong domestic support, and this is definitely guiding Biden's foreign policy at the moment and his response. But overall, we're seeing continued firm support, both in the form of military aid and also Biden's recent trip as well, which really sets the stage for an affirmation of U.S. support amid greater concern about regional destabilization. The U.S. has also moved to deploy 2 naval aircraft carrier strike groups, both to the East Med and also to the Persian Gulf.
And talking about the wider regional implications, I mean, they are quite strategic, but at the tactical level, we've seen actors in the Middle East, Jordan, for example, really strengthen up their air defense, for example. I think we put that out just this morning as we're recording it, didn't we?
Indeed, Jordan did request that the U.S. Deploy Patriot missile defense systems to Amman, well, to the country. So definitely a concern among U.S. allies in the region for greater destabilization.
And of course, we get an awful lot of questions about travel. Travel still very disrupted in the region. Lots of embassies have been and consulates have been closed down. What's the state of kind of U.S. travel advice at the minute to the area?
The State Department issued a very, very unusual worldwide advisory for U.S. citizens traveling abroad, given the heightened tensions, say, throughout the Middle East. We've seen waves of very significant protests across the region, including notably in Iraq, but not limited to Iraq, indeed. And those have been primarily targeted at U.S. embassies and diplomatic posts throughout the region. But there's a broad assessment that there is a sustained risk to U.S. citizens.
Now, on protests, of course, for those listening, some of you might be accessing our dashboards already. However, if you do get in touch with us via the email address, which I believe is going to be in the show notes, you can request free access to all of our Israel coverage. This includes webinars 3 times a week, daily reporting, currently weekend reporting as well, and embedded within those reports are various dashboard links to planned protest dashboards, for example, where we visualize on a map where we believe protests may occur globally. And this is derived via kind of AI-powered technology. We also have a strike map as well, in which we can map planned strikes and targeted strikes from the alert system in Israel and overlay that with actually what impacts have been on the ground. So actual strikes and potential strikes as well. So loads of data out there that will help inform your travel and your take on the situation, as well as a daily report. So given the plethora of reporting we're pushing out there absolutely free, I think we can probably move on.
Absolutely.
Now, on the 22nd of October, Argentina held its most recent presidential election. Sydney, I know you're desperate at some reporting on this, both beforehand and since. We did assess that Milei would maybe win and have the largest, you know, share of the votes. However, it was maybe a lot closer than many had thought. And we're now heading to a second round, which I believe will be held on the 19th of November. So in the wake of, you know, 130% inflation, possibly hitting 160%, you know, economic breakdown inside Argentina. What do these candidates offer the electorate and indeed the region?
Yeah, I think it's really important to reinforce the backdrop to this election is extreme inflation and sluggish economic growth, to say the least. And that this has driven significant anti-establishment sentiment. So you have, on the one hand, the economy minister, Sergio Massa, running against the sort of the libertarian outside candidate, right-wing candidate, Javier Milei, who's pledged some very novel policy proposals, including dollarization, abolishing the central bank, and making severe cuts to social spending and social welfare programs. Now, this is really contrasted against what Massa would propose, which is a broad continuation of the current economic and political doctrine that has, some might argue, led Argentina to this position of extreme inflation. So indeed, given that backdrop, Milei was expected to win the largest vote share, that was our base case scenario, in the first round election, but in a bit of a surprise to all Argentina watchers and political analysts, Massa actually gained 36% of the vote share, while to Milei's 30%. So Massa eked out a marginal, you know, increase over Milei, and this is the case going into the second round election.
So unexpected results, and of course this is also in the wake of a fuel shortage, and I know we've been reporting on some of the candidates' positions on that.
Yeah, indeed. The country is seeing a fuel shortage, and subsequently, Sergio Massa has also said that if the fuel supply crunch is not ameliorated, that he's going to prevent companies from exporting. So, you know, we're seeing continued tensions and socioeconomic health constraints in the country, and this is really going to be the backdrop of the second round vote on the 19th of November.
So, I mean, your assessment in terms of the economic outlook then for the country, who should Argentina watchers be rooting for at this point?
Well, that depends on your partisan positions. I wouldn't venture, but I do think that we're still likely to see a Milei victory, though the margin is going to be much closer than previously thought.
And 160% inflation.
Essentially, yeah.
Fascinating stuff. And of course, if folks want to get hold of that report or any of the reporting, please do email info@sibylline.co.uk and you'll be able to find that in the show notes as well. Okay, so finally then, because we are running up against time, a few weeks ago, your desk did put out some reporting on a Sikh activist who was shot and killed in Canada. It's since come to light that Canadian intelligence is investigating the Indian government. Of course, the Indian government refutes any allegations. However, as we're recording this on the 30th of October, there seems to have been a referendum yesterday that took place on the creation of a Sikh state in India, Khalistan. Why did this referendum take place in Canada? Where did it take place? Have we seen any unrest? What are the threats?
Certainly. So this unofficial referendum, which I would reinforce, is entirely non-binding. It's basically a symbolic measure, and the vote was taken at the place of worship where the Sikh activist was shot earlier in June in Surrey, British Columbia. So the backdrop of this is there has been considerable ethno-religious tensions in Canada in the intervening months. There have been very notable protests outside of the Indian High Commission and other Indian diplomatic representations throughout Canada, both between pro-Khalistan and Sikh activists and also Hindu activists. So we've seen very significant tensions and domestic unrest within the Indian diaspora in Canada.
And have we seen this explode over the last 24 hours as a result of this referendum? Are tensions still elevated? Do we see any direct threats to, you know, individuals and organizations in the area?
Well, as of yet, there have been acts of vandalism, but they've primarily been targeted at diplomatic representations and places of worship so far. So threats to organizations and business assets is low at the moment. The overall tensions remain rather high, and it remains possible that further destabilization could occur and further mass protests.
And have there been any travel advisories for individuals based off the back of this? What the Canadian government actually said about this?
Well, there haven't been any specific advisories. However, the Canadian government actually withdrew 41 diplomats from India last week. We've also seen a sort of diplomatic tit for tat in that regard between Canadian and Indian officials.
Another fascinating story, I'm sure. We'll keep monitoring it. But for now, on this slightly abridged podcast, it's been wonderful talking to you again, Sydney, and I look forward to welcoming you next time.
Thanks, Gareth.
And that's it for another episode of Civiline Insights. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you, of course, to my co-host, Sydney Stewart. Remember, you can access our Israel reporting absolutely free by emailing info@civiline.co.uk, where you can get access to not only daily reporting, but also three webinars per week, and those all-important data dashboards that are actually embedded within the report. Similarly, please do reach out if you've got any questions on anything you've seen today, or any questions in general. We do as well regular free Ukraine reporting, and we do push out an awful lot of our output on LinkedIn. So do look at our LinkedIn page. You'll see a treasure trove there of risk intelligence for you to enjoy. In the meanwhile, though, stay safe. We look forward to welcoming you back for another episode of Civiline Insights.